What do you want to do, Jared Leto? And he was like, let's go rock climbing. So we took a car together over to Chelsea Piers. He put Max on his back, put a little helmet on Maxine, and he climbed a rock wall with Maxine. Hey, Brian and Maxine, in this case, how are you?
Good, we're doing all right. How are you doing?
Good, good. Welcome to the show. Was nice to see you both in Las Vegas at the Creative Economy Live, you know, in person. I know that we're both in the same city. How are things in this period of the year?
Oh, cold and gray.
I know.
Yeah, no, January is always like, it's a great time to just to like reset and make the plan for the year, which is what we're doing.
Fantastic. And again, you know, we know each other a bit. We are, you know, again, in the same membership, Hampton. We met, a few events here in New York, now last time in Las Vegas. So I know a bit about yourself. You have a big following, so I'm pretty sure that also people listening know you. But in a nutshell, we use this map thing where we say, you know, basically the mission, you know, so what do you want to achieve, the achievements, anything that you want to share with us, and the purpose. So what do you want, you know, why do you do what you do? Just to know a bit to yourself, you know, a bit better. We're going to go more in details, but it's just like, you know, some elevator pitch about yourself.
Yeah, so I went to film school at NYU. Graduated in 2009, and I was working in advertising. I made a movie that premiered at South by Southwest, a feature film. And while I was writing my second feature, my wife and I got a dog and a puppy. And I didn't want to put her in daycare while I went to work. Also, daycare was really expensive, so I would bring her on the train to my office every day. And at the time, the MTA had a new rule that dogs had to be in carriers to ride on the train. Like, I actually got a ticket once for not having a dog
in a carrier.
It's kind of crazy. So I looked at every carrier on the market. This was 2015, before like influencers were kind of a really kind of more widely used term, which was 2017. But, you know, I made an Instagram account for her and just as a creative outlet. I was in a creative industry. I just wanted to make stuff. So I just started throwing stuff online just as like a fun thing to do. Yeah, basically, to make a long story short, over the next 6 years, built her accounts up to where they are now, which is about 7 million followers across platforms. We became known as the dog in the backpack. And in 2021, we launched a company called Little Chunk, where we invented the Maxine One dog backpack. You know, there's a real need in the pet industry for high quality products. You know, we were early to what we're seeing now, which is like the premiumization and humanization of the entire pet industry. For my dog, I wanted better built products that were designed with premium materials. And so we built it, launched it off of Maxine's channels, yep. Sold out in 4 minutes. And we did over seven figures on a $0 CAC in our first year. It was named the best dog backpack by Wired and Cosmopolitan and Good Housekeeping and the Dodo. And now we're developing four new products and kind of scaling in 2024.
You know, watching your videos, some of them are quite crazy, right? You met very influential people. You've been in places that usually people cannot access to, right? So and maybe more about that, like how was your first experience in, again, getting all this, love and this big audience and community growing on you? And if you have any, like, I don't know, like exciting or funny stories that happened to you, because I'm pretty sure that you have something to share.
I had really bad food poisoning one day and I was in bed all day. I wake up at like 12 p.m. and I had two emails from Ed Sheeran, probably Ed Sheeran's team, not him directly, being like, hey, Ed Sheeran's going to be at the Howard Stern show tomorrow. Would love to meet Maxine. I don't know. It just kind of felt fake to me. So I just, and I was like, peace. So I went back to sleep. And then at 4 o'clock, there was another email being like, hey, following up, meet us at that, you know? And I'm just like, it kind of clicked. And I was like, wait, holy shit. I think this is real. And I mean, luckily I wasn't really sick come the next morning because I was like, well, if I'm still sick, obviously I'm not going to the Howard Stern show. So we rushed over the next day, felt fine. Rushed over to the Howard Stern show, sitting in the green room with Chris Olsen, who we met, who's another big influencer, who is just truly the nicest person in the world. And Sheeran walks in with like 50 people trailing him. And he's like, hello. And I'm like, wow, it's just weird to see in person. And I was just like, all those interactions, they're transactional because these people they're very busy. This, you know, I get what this is. I'm like, hey, do you want to wear Maxine? And he's like, okay. We got a hit up from Jared Leto on Instagram. He was in town promoting his new album and was there for Fashion Week. So I just like went down to the Thompson Hotel and they're like, all right, come upstairs to the hotel. Like Jared's up there. We go up to the hotel and Jared says, hi. He said, I don't know. That's, I mean, like, what do you want to do, Jared Leto? And he was like, let's go rock climbing. Because I didn't know he's like a very renowned rock climber. Like he climbs with Jimmy Chin, which is crazy. So we took a car together over to Chelsea Piers. He put Max on his back, put a little helmet on Maxine, and he climbed a rock wall with Maxine. So, you know, being able to like hit up a bakery to be, you know, that makes something fun. Like my nieces, we went to Vegas. My nieces were like, oh, you have to hit up this bakery. I was like, okay. You know, these like 13-year-old girls were like, go do this. Okay. And, you know, you DM them. And immediately, like, yeah, come on by. We'll give you like a dozen donuts. We'll design Maxine's face on them. And it's just cool. Like, I don't care about donuts, but I like to go on weird adventures with my dog and get like things customized for my dog. Like, that's just a cool memory to have. So
it is because you have an audience, right? Watching your videos and commenting and so on. How do you manage that? Like, are you a person that tries to comment on kind of like everything that they write to you? Are you more of a person like, I don't even look at comments because sometimes, you know, there are hateful, like, first of all, how is the relationship there? Like, are you finding social media going, at least for you, in a direction where there's a bit of more love lately? Is still like a hateful place for it to be? Is it 50-50? What happens with your audience?
Our audience knows us really well. We've also gotten, Maxine is pretty well known, I feel like, above even her social following because we live in New York. Because we get opportunities to put Maxine in to like embed her into the cultural zeitgeist a little bit. So everybody knows us, like they know our story. That's always been like a really important thing, that this started from a genuine place because I love my dog and we just kind of followed the breadcrumbs. Like we never intended to have a big account, never intended to start a company, never intended to build a product. But it was really born out of an authentic place, which I think our audience really likes, and they know I take really good care of her. I think the only time we ever get hateful comments is like, you know, on a TikTok video where it just kind of scales past our audience and gets like tens of millions of views. And then there's people who don't know us. Mm-hmm. And they just say stupid shit, which is like, it's not really that hateful. You know, people will always chime in and, you know, be like, you're hurting the dog. And it's like, no, you're not. I mean, people say stupid shit because they don't know what they're talking about. That's what happens on the internet. I don't really knock anybody for it. I think the only time we ever got hateful comments is, you know, we're Jewish. Mm-hmm. We post stuff during Hanukkah.
That's different, unfortunately. Yeah. Like, no matter the rain.
It's, you know, you'll get like emojis on a Hanukkah post, and which it doesn't bother. I just wish they were a little bit more creative. But it, you know, the easy answer is we don't get a lot of hate. Yeah. It's a lot of love, and you know, we've got a really, really close relationship with our audience. Like, I spend a lot of my time in the DMs, reading them, responding to people. Like, we do a lot of weird shit. Like, there's this whole thing on Maxine's Instagram account where, you know, she goes out to the balcony and will bark to a neighboring dog who barks back at her. So I made up this whole thing about, like, it's kind of like Golden Girls, if you're familiar with that show. It's like these chatty women in the neighborhood, and she's got a best friend who's also kind of bitchy, and her name's Patty. And so we make up stories and have fun, and our audience likes that, and they play back. And I find that really charming, that it's just like, if you want to DM us or DM Little Chunk, you know, like, I'll respond. And if I like the comment, I'll reshare it, and it'll just kind of get a conversation going. So I love responding to comments. I love reading them.
Do you manage all this community only inside your social media channels, or do you have also them like outside, let's say in a Discord channel, for instance, where you can communicate?
Oh, no. Everything. Most of the community and the community engagement is on Instagram.
Okay.
That's where it's really close. TikTok still doesn't feel intimate to me. And I think that's a matter, and it's just because of how that algorithm works. Like, most of the videos that really scale, you just look at the numbers, like most of those followers are not mine. So not really intimate conversation. We found that on Instagram it is. Instagram is like a really, really tight-knit community that we have.
And maybe because, as you said, like in Instagram, you follow someone because you really want to follow someone. And then, you know, you see in the feed, you see in the stories, while TikTok is the inverse funnel, right? You are not followed by the person, it's going to come on your For You page. And then, as you correctly said before, if they don't know you, they're going to just like, start like, you know, really either like commenting on things that they don't really know about. That's why I think that is that, right? And that's, well, what about YouTube? I know that you have some videos there, but how do you feel on that?
We haven't nurtured YouTube the way that probably it requires. YouTube's a great platform. YouTube is probably like the most solid video platform. We just, you know, it's a time issue. Like, we don't have a team of people.
While you mentioned that, I also watched quickly the second 60-second interview that you did, you know, like, you know, the one, like, you know, would you invest or not, right?
With Alex Lieberman.
Sure. Right? So, and you said something was like, when did you want to, like, you know, decided to be an entrepreneur? Like, you didn't want to be an entrepreneur. You were like, oh, I never wanted something like that, right? But I have responsibilities now. So how was for you this almost forced, right, way to become an entrepreneur?
This was never the plan. I did it because I felt I needed to. You know, there's nobody stepping up to the plate to, like, really, I really feel like in the pet industry, it's really hard to trust these brands and these companies making really shitty products. So we did it ourselves. We realized that everybody is just so slow to really put some thought and care and concern into how they're taking care of these pets. I mean, like, I would die for my dog. And I just want to bring that same passion to everybody else. In the past 6 years, this getting an Instagram channel and being able to, like, quit my job and do this for a living is such a gift. So now it's all about how can we give back to the community and push the pet industry in a new direction that we feel like it should be going. It's really, like, the first time in my life where I've ever truly thought, okay, I can do this better than the person next to me. So that's what we're doing. We're building the Nike for the pet.
Hello! Is your brand ready to amplify its reach? Well, the Influencer Marketing Factory is here to do just that. We are a global influencer marketing agency helping brands ignite their growth, from influencer identification to campaign strategy, handling legalities and agreements to managing shipping and logistics. We have it all covered. We work with hundreds of brands across different verticals, from Fortune 500 companies to DTC brands. And we don't just stop there. With detailed ROI analysis, we help brands like yours measure success, transforming impressions into actionable conversions. You can find us at theinfluencermarketingfactory.com or just search the Influencer Marketing Factory on Google.
Was there anything else challenging during this journey? Something that if you had to talk with another entrepreneur and they wanted to ask you, like, hey, did you have any challenges and how you, fix any problems or anything like that?
A million problems a day. Every day has gotten exponentially more difficult. When you're building a company, when you have, we only did a friends and family round of financing, so we don't have, like, a VC that we're answering to, thank God. There's this, like, misconception right now about, like, if you have an audience that you can sell a product. That's 1,000% not true. Not everybody with an audience even has a product to sell. And even if you get a product to sell, you're not sure if your audience wants it. What people don't understand is that the marketing and the distribution, it's a really unfair advantage, and it's fantastic. And it's a much easier way to get your product out there, especially in today's climate. What so many of these companies fail to understand is that the death knell to your business will be your inventory forecasting and your supply chain logistics, which are remarkably difficult. And it's really difficult if you don't have somebody at the helm who really understands all of that. And for us, like, I'm not just the marketing channel for this company. I'm the CEO, me and my co-founder. Like, and we also didn't come from, we don't have a CPG background. We have content background. So it was, how can we fortify our business with the right people, the right advisors, the right investors who can help us in the direction that we need to go and who can quickly answer the questions that we have? And we're very lucky to have a really big support team. You know, we lean very heavily on my wife throughout this entire thing. We were both working from home. She basically runs the supply chain at CareUp, which is a vitamin subscription company. So she's dealing with and she did that through COVID, massively complicated supply chain. So many touch points, so many things to keep in mind. And this is just a world that if you don't know it, it's really hard to understand, like, how difficult it is. So a lot of people kind of throw themselves into this, which is great. You know, like, listen, if you told me every problem that was going to come up before I did this, I probably wouldn't do it. It's like the same thing with getting a dog. If you told me how difficult it was to raise a dog, that would detract me from doing it. But, you know, as long as you're up to the task of running a business, you know, I think it's one of the most difficult things.
But that's why, you know, I like that you brought up something like supply chain. It's not the sexiest things if you think about it. Like, you know, it's not one of the things that you think about. Like, you know, when you post something about, you know, successful entrepreneurs, right? It's not about supply chain, but it's part of the job, especially when it comes to consumer product, right? You have to think about, like, okay, let me change my vendors from this place to that place because by unit I can spend less, and then also, like, they ship faster and yada yada yada, all these type of things that you don't think about it on day one, but they absolutely can affect your business, especially when you start scaling, right? So in addition to the product, tell me a bit more about your business model in terms of revenue streams. Is it like brand deals plus these, like, do you do brand deals at all? Have you tried in the past? Do you just want one core revenue stream that is the product?
Little Chunk is strictly a CPG business. So it's basically all product. For Maxine, it's brand deals. We don't chase platform revenue because that's
that would just, would take up too much time these days. Like most of my time is focused on Little Chop. And so income is found through doing brand deals and, you know, finding the right brand partners, which again, we've been very lucky to have over the past few years. That's kind of able to sustain my, you know, cost of living. Because to date, we haven't taken any payouts from Little Chonk. Every dollar we make has been reinvested in the business.
You said at the beginning something about that not every influencer should create a product, right? Not everyone, just because they have an audience, are able to influence the others in buying. So with that said, do you have instead any other products made by influencers, in addition to yours, of course, that we talked about before, that you like? Do you think that there is anything else out there that you were like, this was a good job, it was in line with the influencer, I like how they did the landing page, communication, and so on. I'm quite curious to see from your point of view, since you are not just a creator, but now an entrepreneur is making consumer goods.
I don't know. I don't have like a good answer for that, because I think so many of these products are not solving any problems for me.
Okay.
I think that's kind of like how we think about everything is like, does it solve a problem? People need.
But also the quality components, right? I noticed that sometimes they're like cheap quality, and I think that it can also, I think that could also harm not just the product like that you're selling, but all your online digital, you know, aspects, right? Because if you're selling something that is poor quality just to sell something out, then people are going to start associating the quality of the product, right? It could be cheap.
Yeah, we've seen that. That's with there have been some pretty big name brands recently that have filed for bankruptcy because the quality of the product just wasn't there. So you're not getting repeat purchases. So these companies are going to debt because you might have an influencer selling a product, but like if they're not coming back or, you know, talk to their friends about it, you really don't have a long shelf life on that customer. So if it's not a quality product, like you can do all the marketing you want, but if there's no value proposition, I don't know what you're doing. I mean, a lot of people, hey, like brand is everything. And like, yeah, we believe brand is absolutely paramount. But if there's no foundation of a quality product, how are you going to be able to tell that story over and over and over and over and over and consistently talk to people with some vigor about what you're building? So I'm not really bullish on TikTok Shop. I know they said that they did a lot of money. I believe it. You know, like I dump shit on TikTok Shop. But like in terms of a brand, Stanley's an outlier. I don't want to hear any more about Stanley. You're an outlier on TikTok Shop. Again, I think that CMO is a brilliant guy coming from Crocs. Most of it, I haven't seen the proof in the pudding of brands activating on TikTok Shop. I'm reluctant to get on it. I'll also say that that's probably a mistake, because if you're early to the game and they're really kind of start scaling rapidly, then I think you can see like real growth on TikTok Shop. But it seems like in terms of the products people are building, it's just a race to the bottom. Everybody's trying to go now. Like, let's get it out there now. Oh, we got an influencer. Let's do this now. And I think people are still missing the fundamentals of like, you know, long-term growth. It's really incumbent on the influencers to fortify your company with the people who are really, really invested in building something, if that's your goal. If your goal is just to have a really strong quarter and throw a product out there that you've white labeled or like, you know, we've got the audience, let's do it. Like, you'll make some money, sure. But then it's like, what's the point other than it just being a fad?
Totally, 100%. We discussed about this in the past in other episodes about the importance of like, you know, short term, you get millions of views, whatever, and then long term, like, you know, X amount of years are going to be there. What about your brands and so on? So
heavily overrated. Like, that's the fun stuff, man. What, yeah. The rubber meets the road right after. Like, what do you do after that when sales start declining or when there's like recession? You know, it's like, do you really want to do this? It's hard. It's really hard. You know, we've been very fortunate to have really strong sales and have the distribution platform. But like, there are still days where I think like one thing could just like end it, and then you just want to like fall back on like making content. It's really difficult. So I would say for anybody who wants to build something, just solve a problem and be convicted and just know that like launch is really fun, but the weeks following launch are absolutely brutal. That's when you really have to figure out how do you sustain growth without like constantly dumping money into a paid media strategy.
Thank you for being so transparent on that. I really appreciate it. Between entrepreneurs, not that many people talk about the behind the scenes. So thank you for that, Brian. And Maxine, that is not in the screen with us anymore, but it's send back. I'm amazing. is always with you all day in the room when you work from home.
It's like my shadow. She follows me everywhere.
Perfect. Love to see that. Brian, thank you so much again for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
This was The Influence Factor by The Influencer Marketing Factory, and I'll see you next week.